views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, you're back with us for a second hour. SportsTalk1240.com. If you're out there, get on, listen up. We got a special guest tonight. Going to be Donnie LaGreca coming on in just a couple of minutes from ESPN Radio. He is New York's hockey expert. And this song is from my partner, John Sweeney, as he continues to celebrate his big 15-second overtime win today, along with the man joining us for the second hour, who had the first hour, Gary Harding. Harding and Sweeney.
And we got the two goal scorers, the sweaters on tonight. He's wearing a Posto sweater, and I'm wearing Johnny T sweater.
You are very nice jerseys.
Thank you.
I'm not wearing a Ranger jersey today. I'm wearing my coaching sweater.
Is that in mourning?
Because the Rangers have gotten a response time this year after bad losses. And I have full faith in Vigneault. We will have this team ready for tomorrow night in Pittsburgh.
Can I just say one thing before we go any further?
Yeah, go ahead.
I am ecstatic today because we won and you lost yesterday. That's so How You Like Me Now is my song.
That's why it's your song.
Thank you.
So you can thank me for playing that for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And now we're going to lower it down.
I want to hear the train coming.
I'm not going to give a monologue on the Rangers because then I just repeat myself talking to Don.
That's right.
He covers the Rangers pre- and post-game, does play-by-play, select games when he's assigned.
I will say Don is the
We're going to bring him in. Donnie LaGreca from ESPN Radio. What's going on tonight, Donnie?
How are you, buddy? Doing all right?
Very good. And you're here with me, Gary Harding, and John Sweeney, two Islander fans across from me. It's getting very touchy.
How's it going, Don?
You know, the playoffs are going along, and the Islanders take a 2-1 lead in a series for the first time since 1993. They get their first overtime winner since 93. And, you know, I'm sitting here 15 seconds at the overtime. I'm like, I hope this isn't going to be like J.P. Parisi back in 75 when they started that 10-year run. But these guys are happy, and rightfully so. But we touched on the Islanders a lot in the first hour. We might go back to that for a few questions for you. But we're going to focus on the Rangers now. And, Don, I want to get your thoughts. But first and foremost, in terms of just one thing that I'm disappointed in with the Rangers through the first two games, I would say that it's in the inability, offensively, because they're one of the top five scoring teams this year, the inability to take advantage of an injury-depleted defense, especially with Chris Letang being out. Do you think that's a fair assessment for me?
Well, definitely in game two. I mean, they got 38 shots on goal in the first game, and you can't say it's all because of the power play opportunities because they had 13 shots in the first period with four power plays, but they still ended up with 38 shots on goal despite only having one power play in the last 40 minutes of the game. Right. So I thought they did a really good job in the first game, and just Fleury was really good. But what happened, not being able to get really anything going, I mean, you're home, the building's going crazy, and you don't even get – they did get the first shot on goal of the game because Pittsburgh didn't have any opportunities either. But, I mean, how often do you see a Ranger team go 7.5 minutes into a game without a shot on goal? And it never really changed until they had that one power play where Stepan hit the post and in the early third period, and they had seven shots on goal in that power play. But otherwise, I think the real disappointment lies in not taking advantage of Pittsburgh's situation in game two.
Yeah, Donnie, you know, to me, the difference between game one and game two was in game one, the Rangers got off to a great start, scored 28 seconds in, and they followed that. Listen, they got four power plays in that first period, and they made the Penguins pay. They got that power play goal to go up 2-0 instead of keeping it 1-0, right, or getting the game tied back up. And that was key going the rest of the way with their forecheck involved. But last night, up 1-0 the first period, Rangers another three power plays or so. The failure to make Pittsburgh pay for taking the stupid penalties is what has cost them a chance at going up 2-0.
Well, 2-for-12 on the power play, that's just ridiculous. But we've seen teams struggle on the power play and still right. win games. We've seen this team struggle on the power play and still win games. So
right.
why is it that they only that they're not doing what is necessary, not just on the power play, but even 5-on-5. You know, you talk about the goals that were scored. And forget the Nash goal. That was in garbage time. There was no chance of them winning the game
right.
at that point. But even still, you're not looking at even the dominance 5-on-5 that you would like to see as far as scoring goals are concerned. Now, they've gotten into droughts before. And the power play went from, my God, I guess a month ago when they were in Chicago and they beat the Blackhawks 1-0 in overtime. They had a 10th-ranked power play going into that game.
Right.
You know, and then they end up closing out the regular season 21st. So This has been a slump now that's going on for quite a while, but they can even do a better job 5-on-5.
Well, you know what the big problem is, though, because the Rangers have been a very disciplined team through the first two games, but when you let the other team execute at 40% on the power play, that winds up being a problem. That Pittsburgh's 2-for-5 on the power play so far.
Well, they came in 10th, and you know when you've got Crosby and you've got Malkin and you've got Kunitz. I mean, I think everybody knew going in that even though Pittsburgh struggled to get into the playoffs, only finished with 98 points compared to the Rangers' 113, that the Rangers were the superior team. But I think everybody knew that if given a chance that, you know, Crosby was going to wake up and these players were just too good to be held down, and you give them power play opportunities, it's no surprise. Now, should you allow them to go 2-for-4 and actually get 2-for-2 to start the game on the power play? Absolutely not. But I think everybody understands that. But the feeling was, well, it's not going to be a big deal because the Rangers are never going to be in a position where one or two power play goals are going to kill them. And so far, that's exactly what the case has been. So they've got to try to find some finish in their game, especially in Game 1 when they had just the two goals on 38 shots. But they've got to get a lot more rubber at this team. And this team, and you watch them too, they have a tendency sometimes, and that wasn't the case in Game 1, that when they start to get up against it, their unselfishness comes back to burn them. And now they're trying for the perfect play and the perfect pass, and you take it. No, you take it philosophy, especially on the power play. It's not going to work. Shoot the puck. Derek Brassard had 11 shots on goal combined in the last game of the regular season, the first game of the playoffs. That's got to be the mentality. I didn't see that at all last night. They got to get more rubber at Marc-Andre Fleury. 26 shots on goal. He's not going to get it done.
Yeah. Listen, Fleury, after the first period in Game 1, he's been real good since then. I think part of the thing is getting to the net and getting traffic. If you look at the goals that Crosby scored, they were not goal scorers' goals. He was getting to the net. The Rangers were either caught flat-footed or not coming back hard to the net to defend and possibly clear some pucks out of there. And so, you know, Crosby gets to the net and Hornquist sets him up. You know, on that particular play, that transition to the neutral zone, Marty St. Louis was the guy back-checking. The two defensemen were caught behind Hornquist.
Right.
And they got caught flat-footed, and nobody did what you need to do, get your body between the man and the goal. And Crosby was there, first guy there when the puck came across, put it in. And then the other one when, you know, the third goal, when Hayes couldn't help clear the puck out, it's turned back right to the net, right? Kunitz fed him right in front, and he just redirected it past Lundqvist. That was it. And that's because Hayes doesn't clear the puck, and Haglund takes a wide turn back, and nobody's looking to get their body between their goalie and whatever's coming. And those are just fundamentals of the game. But the Rangers have been really good in responses all season long. The one thing I didn't like last night is in Game 1, in addition to getting that power play goal in the first and then playing good defensively, they weren't just good defensively. Everyone thinks defense, they think the defense zone. But on the forecheck, their defense in the attacking zone, Jesper Fast was a factor in that game. JT Miller was a big factor in that game. Carl Hagelin was a big factor. Last night, not really. You wonder who was a factor last night? Brandon Sutter was a factor. And Chris Kunitz, who was invisible in Game 1 for the most part, last night, not only physically, but he put up 3 points. And there's a guy who's cost Pittsburgh this year. He had less than 20 goals in the regular season, right?
Yeah. But we know what his ability can be, and you're right. Sutter almost scored shorthanded. He rang one off the post. And then he ends up scoring a goal. And you're right, 3 points from Kunitz, who had been quiet for much of the year. So that's what scares you, is that, all right, what's one thing, Crosby, Malkin, eventually you figure is going to wake up. Crosby already did. But, you know, if Kunitz is going to contribute, Blake Como's always had Lundqvist's number. So there are a lot of different focuses offensively to worry about with Pittsburgh. But you figure you got Hank, you know, and he's had, and the team has had, as you said, the ability to bounce back after bad performances. So you would think that tomorrow this team would really be on top of their game and take that 2-1 series lead. But credit Pittsburgh. You mentioned the neutral zone for Pittsburgh offensively, but even defensively. You know, the Rangers get a lot of their opportunities trying to come up ice with speed. And when that neutral zone gets clogged up and they miss on that one outlet pass or that one pass isn't perfect, it goes back the other way. And this is a team that always instinctively tries to think offensively to push the puck up. And when they make mistakes all season long, it's been everybody's moving up and then the puck doesn't get out of the zone and they're caught shorthanded on the way back. So they've got to find a way to get able to find some lanes, get through the neutral zone, and use the speed that they have and the advantage that they have offensively to try to get opportunities.
And, you know, Don, you just said it right there, the speed factor. The Rangers, they're not stretching the ice with their pass game. They are not stretching the ice from goal line to far blue line, and that's hurting them. You know, you look at a guy like Chris Kreider. Now, last night, after the first period, there were a couple of chances where he, you know, they were trying to exploit his speed. But in the first game, not a lot done on his part. For a power forward, not a lot done on his part to, you know, because he's not a crafty guy with the stick work and handling the puck. He is a straight line player. You got to get him in space where he can take his speed and literally run past defenders. And that's not being done. And even guys like Hagelin, I think that their whole concept is being, and listen, there's two teams competing. Pittsburgh, to me, is suffocating it right now. They're playing defensive hockey because they don't want to try. Amazing to say, because they got Crosby and Malkin. But they don't want to allow the Rangers to open it up. They are well aware of what the Rangers did in the regular season, scoring points. And you look at a guy like Malkin. How about this one, Don? Rangers had a chance at a shorthanded goal. And the hustle by Malkin, they were like four penguins in that crease with Fleury,
right.
And he saved that goal. That was the difference. It's the little things that mean a lot in games. And that was the difference between Game 1 and Game 2, that kind of hustle factor from him. It was there for the Rangers in Game 1. That's why they held the 2-1 lead. Last night it wasn't there, and when they gave up that, you know, that fourth goal, that was pretty much it. You know, the way they came out in the third period, we were talking about the Islanders. They have had great starts to all their games so far.
Yep.
And the Rangers last night, if they would have started the game in terms of tempo setting, the way they started that third period would have been a different game. But that, you know, you can say whatever you want about that. That's not what happened, right?
But, you know, you look at it, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can, you know, break it down. Like I said, Brandon Sutter misses, you know, hits the net on a shorthanded goal. If that goes in, different story. But, you know, they come back, they get the power play goal to make it 3-2. Stepan nails the post, looks like it's in. If that's an inch over, it's a 3-3 game. So, you know, we could talk a lot about getting outplayed, not playing right.
Right.
Yeah, but there were a couple of times where, you know, they had the lead. They cut it within one goal in the third period. So I don't think there's any reason to panic at all. They just got to find a way to be able to get all the things up ice. And, you know, Hank's going to bounce back. I don't even think he played that terribly, but you know that he's got to have a big performance in him. And this is just what this team has done. You know, they haven't won a game two on home ice since the Stanley Cup final in 94.
Right.
You know, even last year they had a chance to put Philadelphia away early, couldn't do it. Put Pittsburgh away early in the second round, couldn't do it. You know, this team traditionally wins game one, loses game two. And I think last night is just the difference of the length of the series. I still think the Rangers are the better team, and that will show over time. Pittsburgh can't continue to play this way, committing penalties and not have it burn them. I think they've got the better goaltender. I think they've got the better system, the deeper team. You know, Klein's going to probably come back at some point. That's certainly going to help. So the one thing the Ranger fan can't freak out about is that they lost the game. Only two teams are up 2-0 in the series, the Ducks and the Canadians.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So unless those two teams win the Stanley Cup, somebody who split the first two games of their playoffs are going to win the Stanley Cup. So you can't freak out about it, but unfortunately you got a lot of people that expected so many big, great things from this team that they were just going to run roughshod over Pittsburgh. I thought that was, you know, silly to think that in the first place. You hate losing home ice, but the Rangers have been good on the road all year long.
Yeah.
And tomorrow is going to be a pivotal game because you don't want to fall behind. I get that.
Right.
But you want to bounce back, and they've done it all year.
No, 28 road wins, and you got to get
best
one
in the league, right?
The idea is you got to get one of these two on the road. And I didn't freak out about the loss. Like I said, it was just in terms of what you're looking at. Like you said, Rangers much more consistent, better team in the regular season. The injury depleted state of the Pittsburgh defense, it was just from an offensive standpoint, because this is one of the better offensive teams the Rangers have put up since the lockout. So to not be able to take advantage of that was the only disappointing thing to me personally watching them play, that they weren't able to stretch the ice like they've been doing so well. And Pittsburgh, that was the first time they scored four goals since, like, I think, March 11th. You know, they had trouble scoring goals recently.
But, you know, let's look at the defensemen that are hurt for Pittsburgh, okay? I mean, Letang is an offensive defenseman, all right? You lose him, and I'm not saying that that isn't a big loss. He might have won the Norris Trophy had he not gotten hurt last year, but, you know, that's not a lockdown defenseman. I mean, Derek Pouliot is not somebody that you circled as a huge and great defenseman, you know, on this team.
Right.
You know, and I thought Chorney has stepped in, and he's done well. They've given him time on shorthanded, given him time on the power play. I mean, I give Johnston credit. He's not hiding any of these young players, of these guys that we had no idea about.
No, he's playing them.
He's given them minutes. He's given them time in key situations, and they've stepped up. So, you know, sometimes you got to acknowledge and give credit to the other team. And I thought that they played exceptionally well, and the guys that have come in as replacements have done a really good job for this team. So, yeah, you want to exploit the fact that they're shorthanded defensively.
Yeah.
But whether it's Dumoulin, whether it's Tourney, those guys have come in and have done a pretty decent job for Pittsburgh.
No, they have.
Them credit.
But Letang being out, I mean, he's a nasty player when he's on his game and he gives you the offense. But I was more thinking collectively him and Ali Mata, he was a real good rookie last year.
Sure.
And even Aerhoff's been out for the better part of the season.
Is he coming back now?
I mean, but that's three legit starters for the Pittsburgh defense.
Right.
So that's the only thing I look at in that regard. I look for them to respond offensively coming back tomorrow. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, but even Aerhoff is a guy that, you know, I like him offensively. Listen, you don't want to lose defensemen, but I think that sometimes when you get guys whose job it is to be defensemen, you know, and not worried about coming up ice and not worrying about things offensively, they concentrate on their jobs. I think that's why Pittsburgh's playing the type of game that they're playing, because they know they can't, you know, run up and down with this Rangers team. They can't do it. So they've got to change the way they play. And the guys that are in there for the injuries, I think, are probably better adept to playing that style than if it was Aerhoff and Letang that were in there, because then they'd be more offensive. They'd be pinching. They'd be playing a more up-tempo game. This has forced them to slow it down, clog it up, and those guys have done a good job doing that.
No, I agree with you, and I think the coach is fully confident and aware of what's going on. He's won several President's Trophies. He's been to the Stanley Cup. He knows exactly what's in front of him. You know, it ain't going to be the best team winning if you allow the other team to outwork you and out-execute you. So, you know, I think tomorrow night, in terms of being a fan, you got to look at certain guys. I'm looking at Chris Kreider coming into that game. I'm looking at Zuccarello. Those two guys in terms of scoring goals, along with St. Louis and obviously Nash. Listen, when Nash scored the goal last night, I could imagine what any Ranger fan was saying. And you know, so far, Crosby's getting the goals, and Nash hasn't had a crucial goal yet. And those games are going to continue to add. Oh. Last year's playoff run, the year before that. So he's got to find a way to be a bigger factor. I think, from a real important standpoint, in terms of the weapon that nobody has, I think Kreider needs to be more of a factor from game to game. So that's really who I'm looking at tomorrow night.
Well, that, you know, you talk about that patented rush up the wing, cut in front of the goaltender. He had one of those that I remember yesterday, and that was early in the second period. So,
okay.
Yeah, he's going to have to do that. I mean, they have so many difference makers on this team, in my opinion, but you're right. Hagelin's got to play better. Kreider's got to play better. They just haven't really, as good as they've been all season long from an offensive standpoint, we've never really seen them all clicking at the same time.
Right.
If they could ever get that, this team can be a machine. But, you know, it's got to happen. So credit Pittsburgh. I think Fleury's been good. And
he has.
And we'll see if the power play can be a little bit better. But I still think you got to have a lot of confidence in this Ranger team moving forward.
Oh, and you should. The next two games will be very interesting to see what the approach is coming out to start the game tomorrow night in Pittsburgh. Now, I wanted to get to a couple other series with you. Ottawa still leads Montreal 1-0, about 12 minutes left. Give me your opinion, because I thought they missed the boat on not having at least a hearing for P.K. Subban on that slash on Stone in Game 1. What were your feelings about that, observing that?
Well, the feeling is, and I talked to a lot of people about it, on why there wouldn't be more discipline on him, and I think it just really came down to the fact of Stone, of the Ottawa Senators unable to prove that the microfracture came from the Stone slash.
Right.
You know, talking to people around the league, that if you are to give an X-ray or an MRI to any player in the National Hockey League, you're likely to find a microfracture in that area of their body. Just that, especially this late in the season, it's going to happen. And the Senators were quite frankly asked, hey, do you believe that microfracture came from the slash? And they couldn't definitively say it. So the fact that Stone came back and played, right then I kind of knew there probably wouldn't be any discipline beyond maybe the possibility of a fine. Now, was it a stupid play? Absolutely.
Right.
Shorthanded, to take that kind of chop at a player, completely dumb. But the problem I have with Rule 61 is, well, define injury. You know, is he gone for the game? Is he gone for 2 minutes? Stone came back into the game. Clearly he wasn't 100%. But I think it puts a lot of responsibility on official in a split second to determine whether a player is actually injured. Is he faking it? Is he injured, but he can come back? So you can look at it on the Montreal side and say, you know what, he never should have gotten the game misconduct to begin with.
Right.
I think less of an argument because it was such a vicious slash. But as far as the discipline is concerned, Ottawa's inability to prove Stone being hurt from the slash probably cost them a chance of sitting P.K. Subban down.
Yeah. Right, which I agree with. My personal feeling on the whole matter was I thought, based on the severity of the incident And especially since it had nothing to do with the play on the puck at all. I mean, they just went down a man. Subban almost cost his team the game in that spot. But for that kind of slash on the hands and the wrist area, I thought that at least the phone hearing, and even $1,000, I know it's not much money, these guys, but even $1,000, a $2,000 fine. I mean, to me, that would have been called for because this had nothing to do with playing the game. Meaning, there's no way you could explain yourself on that slash. It's indefensible. And that's why I thought they should have done a little more than, why come 48 hours between games, why come out right away and say there's no further discipline? Just wait. He got the game as kind of, I thought the call on the ice was correct for what it was worth. You don't have to suspend him if that's the case, because I agree with what you're saying. But I think they should have handled it a little better, because that was, you know, that was action that you certainly want out of the game.
That's well, there's no that. Question. But I just also wonder, if that slash comes with 5 minutes remaining in a 5-2 game,
right,
does he get suspended? And he's not suspended because it happened in the early stages of a game he gets thrown out of. In effect,
right,
he's almost suspended for a game because right, he had very little impact on game one because of how early in the game it was that he took the penalty and took the misconduct. So I'm not right, saying that that is why they went there.
Yep.
But it wasn't like it didn't go unpunished. This is their best player. This is a kingpin on their power play.
Oh, yeah, he's
and they lose him for 2.5
he's
periods.
A monster. I'm
I mean,
a big
that's
fan
a pretty
of
significant thing.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. He's a monster on the point. That shot is booming. You know, when people say to me, well, the guy came back, he played. I'm like, yeah, that's why he doesn't get 6 or 7 games.
Yeah.
Because if you hurt the guy, now how is it? You're taking out their top scorer since the turn of the new year.
Right.
I mean, Stone was a big part of them making the playoffs, which leads to my other question. You know, I saw your comments today on Twitter about, you know, pitching to Stanton or not. So I don't want to backtrack on what I said, because I said before our show started that I would not have switched goalies because Hammond was the only reason that they made it to the playoffs. So you know what? Dave McCarron's done a great job. He made the switch.
Pitching
and they're still up 1-0, I believe.
Shut up right now, Anderson.
Yeah,
so,
shut up.
But what, would you have made the switch?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, he didn't play great in game one.
Right.
So going with Hammond in game two is almost like, hey, you know, we still have faith in you, kid. We don't make the playoffs if it's not without you. But then you lose game two. Anderson's really your guy. I mean, you can't look past the fact that Hammond had never shown any indication at all that he was going to be a big-time goaltender.
Not at all.
In no stage of his career. Now, it's tough to say go take the bench because they're not in the playoffs without him.
I mean,
his run was historic. But you know that Chariot's going to turn back into a pumpkin at some point.
Right.
And it looked like it has. Anderson's looked great. He's 9 minutes away from pitching the first shutout of the playoffs this year.
He's got 32 saves.
I don't know if I could have done it, you know, because –
I give him a ton of credit as a coach making that switch. That's
a gutsy move. Gutsy move.
It is.
But I really do think it was, hey, I wanted to do it after game one. I'll give him a second chance here. Right. But down 2-0, you know, as good as Ottawa's been down the stretch, Montreal's the better team. Your chances of winning 4 of the next 5 are slim to begin with.
Right.
So maybe it's just, hey, let's do it. Anderson, I believe, is the better goaltender long term. And so far, he's 9 minutes away from being right, and we'll see if this can suck Ottawa back into the series. I had picked the Senators in 7
right,
because of the way they played down the stretch. And it wasn't just Hammond. I mean, the way Torres played and Hoffman played and Stone, as you mentioned.
Right.
There's a lot of the things that they did to get into the playoffs. And then I was worried, you know, if Pacioretty was going to be 100%. So we'll see. Maybe I'll end up being right. If they can hold on to this lead, they got the momentum back, home game in game 4.
Right.
This could turn out to be a long series.
I was with you. I picked Ottawa to win in 7 also. And it says a lot about Montreal, though. I mean, they played without Pacioretty in game 1, right? And Subban got kicked
right
out. They found a way to win the game. So what do you think about this Montreal team? I think they're very goalie reliant. I mean, Price has been a monster. But you know what? Not so much in the first 2 games, 4-3 games. The players did the job. They bailed him out. Pekanik, Galchenyuk, I mean, Subban, you name it. These guys have really stepped up offensively. In the regular season, not so much. Very, you know, shut down. The MVP is going to wind up being Carey Price, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, where would they be without him? I mean, you've got Pacioretty, 37 goals, their highest goal scorer. I look at them. I think they're small in a lot of areas. You know, Desharnais is small. Pekanik is small.
Right.
You know, Markov's big, but he's slow. He's older now on the blue line. I just didn't know if they had enough offense to go far in the playoffs. Now Price can, you know, play out of his mind.
Right.
And maybe they go to the Stanley Cup final last year if he doesn't get hurt in game 1 against the Rangers.
Yeah.
But I just didn't know against the teams they're going to have to play to get through this thing, the Rangers, the Lightning,
Yep.
You know, even this Ottawa team too. I just don't know if they've got enough offense up and down, balanced enough offense, that this is a team that, that could make a significant run to the Stanley Cup final. And even if they get out of this series, you know, you're looking at having to play, you know, the winner of Tampa and Detroit, and it's the same thing. I just don't think anybody they match up with, they can match up offensively. And I would worry about that if I were Montreal.
Yeah, because they're relying on Price. I'll tell you, though, but speedy and feisty, right? I mean, Brendan Gallagher, that kid is a pain in the neck to deal with on the ice, but he never stops coming, right?
Yeah, Galchenyuk is a nice player, too. Like I said, Darnay is a fun player to watch, but I just, outside of Pacioretty, and even that is kind of a stretch, I don't see that dominant, you know, guy that I have to absolutely stop. I think Pacioretty's close to being that. Still very early in his career, but I don't see a Stamkos, I don't see a Nash, I don't see a Zetterberg or Datsyuk. I don't see a guy that is just a dominant puck possessor, get opportunities. This team is missing a Kane. A lot of teams are missing a guy like that. But you know what I mean. When you start talking about Stanley Cup champions. I just don't know if they've got the offense to do it.
Right. Now, Tampa and Detroit, I mean, listen, Ben Bishop looked a little pedestrian-like in Game 1, but Game 2, Tampa responds big time. And how about this kid, Tyler Johnson? Give us your thoughts on him, because he had that breakaway goal.
He had a good year this year, too,
everybody
Johnson.
To put that game away. Did you catch that game yesterday?
Oh, yeah. Listen, he was, you know, he's a tiny player, too, but he makes things happen.
Right.
And then you add, you know, Stamkos, who very quietly had a tremendous year again, and I like what Callahan's brought there. I think Boyle hasn't had an awful year for them. He's actually had his moments, too. That's a team I look at, and the only thing you worry about is Bishop, a guy with no playoff experience to carry a team. But you look at them up and down, and if they can get healthy on the blue line, Hedman always seems to get banged up. And, you know, they went out and made some acquisitions, like getting Carl from Philadelphia. I love their blue line. I do. If it was healthy, 100% healthy, I think they'd have an excellent chance at winning the Cup. But that's a dangerous, dangerous team. That's the one team, if I'm the Rangers, that I say I'm not 100% sure I can get by. That's why you had to be excited when they were beaten in Game 1, but they came right back with force in Game 2. But, you know, that Tampa team, well-coached, disciplined team, a fun team, and a collective 8-0 this year against Montreal and the Rangers. So the two top teams in the conference, the Lightning swept them. Now, the Rangers hadn't played them since November. I get that.
Yeah, they pretty
you
much
can shut down Montreal five straight games, that's saying something, too. So I like that Tampa team.
You know, and they produce offense. They're a big scoring team. So for me, you know, if Bishop settles in, gets through those early series jitters, because he's a young goalie in terms of playoff experience, they're really the biggest worry outside. I mean, Datsyuk and Zetterberg, they're monsters historically for Detroit, but they're a young team. They're kind of making the playoffs every year while they're rebuilding.
Well,
but they'll have to just worry about Detroit's power play, because, like, Washington hasn't panned out for them, but Detroit's another team. They rely heavily on their power play, right?
And they're great at home, too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they got a good home record.
Oh, yeah.
Detroit, to me, just doesn't have the goaltending, you know, and we'll see if they go back with Howard in Game 3, but I like Detroit. I think we'll see if Babcock ends up this being his swan song in Detroit. There's so many rumors he'll go to, you know, Buffalo or Toronto. But, you know, you can't discount them, because they've got a lot of guys that have won rings. They've got a lot of special players. I just don't know. It's a bad matchup for them against Tampa to start, Game 1 notwithstanding. But I just don't look at Detroit as being a major threat. From the Rangers' standpoint, as bad as Pittsburgh was playing, I was kind of looking forward to maybe Detroit and the Rangers hooking up for the first time since 1950, as Montreal just scored to tie that game at 1.
Did they tie it at 1?
5:47 to go in the third period.
There you go. Well, Don, you know, you're talking about Detroit. The last real good game they played, and I shouldn't say that they played a great game, but ever since the Rangers lost, right after the trade deadline, the Rangers lost a 2-1 game to them. But that was the last time I saw Jimmy Howard play a great game.
Yeah.
He stood on his head against the Rangers and gave them a chance to win in overtime, which they did. And then from that point on, Detroit kind of faltered, maybe not to the extent as the Islanders and Pittsburgh even more so, but they weren't impressive at all the last month. And
no,
that's where I think you get those feelings, because I felt the same way. But Mrazek started Game 1 and got them to win. You know, he went against the veteran there, Babcock. What do you think he does here for Game 3?
I think he has to go with Howard. I just think that's a guy that's been there and he's done that. And I think that's where he's probably going to end up going. It's amazing, all these teams that have question marks in goal, right?
Right.
I mean, good teams, too. Chicago, St. Louis. Dale Weiss, by the way, scored the goal for Montreal.
Dale Weiss, not Brian Flynn.
I can't help but always hear in the back of my mind how John Tortorella said he wasn't an NHL player when he was with the Rangers.
Right.
And how many big goals did he score for them last year in the playoffs?
He's had
some,
yeah.
In that first round series against Tampa. Now he scored the tying goal here. That might end up being the game that really takes a stranglehold of this series. Boy, how wrong was John Tortorella about him?
Yeah. Listen, Don, we got to take a quick break. Can you stay with us past that for a few other series to go over?
Yeah, sure.
Because my buddies have some questions for you.
We have the Big Islanders coming up.
All right, so we'll be back after this, folks. Donnie Puck's in the house. More than happy to stay with us. And we got other series to talk about after these messages.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB. Or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you can find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, we're back at Sports Talk 1240 here. 631-888-8811 is the number to call. But we have Donnie Pucks in the house. And Donnie, my partners tonight, John Sweeney and Gary Harding, want to take over for a little bit because they're a little riled up about the Islanders. There's something special brewing at the Coliseum for the last swan song here. So I'm going to throw it to them right now for you.
How's it going, Don? How are you today? Hello?
Hello? You got me, baby?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Yes, yeah. No, I want to talk about the Islanders today and the way they dictated the Washington taking out the first periods of each game, the first half of each game, how they – pushed them, knocked them around, and took control of the beginning of these games and to continue like they did the first game and today.
No, I think up and down the roster, the Islanders are the better team. So it's not surprising to me that they've jumped out to big starts because I just think they're the better team. I think they're more well-rounded. They can roll four lines. Caps can't roll the lines that the Islanders can. My problem with the Islanders, the whole predicting them to go far is just didn't believe Halak could do it. You know, yeah. The way he played down the stretch, and Holpe was a much better quarterback, much better goaltender down the stretch than Halak was. That was the difference to me. That's why I picked the Capitals in six. But, you know, credit Halak, he's been better. But I think that's what better teams do, right? They get off to the start, they get more shots on goal, they dominate, they take the wind out of the sails, and they really could be and really should be up 3-0 in this series, yes. Right? I mean, you got a 3-1 lead in a playoff game. You got to find a way to be able to hold on to it to win, and they couldn't do that in game two. You know, credit the Caps for coming back. But what's got to make you feel good as an Islander fan is that they corrected the problems. They went right back to work in game three. The building was up for grabs. Clearly, that's a building that can sustain them and get them excited for the game coming up on Tuesday. So you got to be pretty thrilled with really how things have gone. And I was talking to an Islander fan earlier. I don't know how you feel about it as an Islander fan. Yeah, you would have loved to hold on and shut them out 1-0. But to get a win in overtime, I think, builds more momentum, gets people more excited. And even though you hated to lose that lead, to me, winning that in overtime was probably more special than if you held on and beat them 1-0.
Yeah, I was trying to find the record overall all time against Washington. Obviously, the 93 run, there were two double overtime games, one triple overtime game, and obviously winning again. Do you think, Don, because of the fact that this team is predominantly a young team, that they're still working on the experiences of the playoffs and stuff? I mean, is it a big problem that they sometimes have that lack of having that killer instinct to go, you know, like you said, they had the 3-1 lead in the second period of game two. They seem to lose it. They seem to fall back on their skates a little bit. Is it just a testament maybe to them of being that young of a team that they don't have that killer instinct or that little edge to, you know, get somebody by the jugular and knock them out?
I mean, I guess it's a collective. It has to be a concern. But you've got Letty. He's won a cup. Boychuk has won a cup.
You've
got a lot
of
guys that were on that team that lost in six games to Pittsburgh 2 years ago. But you're right, as a collective, and Jack Capuano, obviously, you know, being in this situation of trying to get a team out of the first round for the first time ever, or first time since 1993, first time for him. As a collective, I guess it's a concern because, you know, the playoffs are a completely different beast. And, you know, to relate it to the Rangers, there was concern. All right, well, can Kevin Hayes and JT Miller be the players they were in the regular season and the postseason? Because it's a completely different animal.
Right.
But now that you've felt success, now that you have a lead in the series, I think that starts to go away a little bit. You've proven now you can close as you did in game one. You've proven you could face the adversity of losing a game and coming back and winning the next one. You proved that you can handle, even though it was only 16 seconds, the pressure of overtime and what that can mean. So you got to learn it someplace, and there's been so much to go on in these first three games. I think they're learning on the fly, and I think they're learning well.
Definitely agree with that. Just switching gears, because I know we don't have the whole lot of time, I want to just bring in that Vancouver series. Did you hear the rumor that the Vancouver is probably trying to get the Hanson brothers as fighting consultants?
I just think that's disgraceful stuff. I really do. And I'm not trying to sound like, anti-Don Cherry or whatever, but it's just so bogus to me. I understand fighting has a place in the game, but when it's used out of frustration or sending a message for the next, it's just silly and stupid to me. I mean, I don't know what Calgary thinks they're going to get from it. They're the underdog, you know, play that role. You know, Vancouver, I don't know what they think they are. You know, I know that they went to a Stanley Cup final in 2011, but it's not like they've been any kind of a threat since then. So I don't know why we need to see that kind of stuff and Hartley saying what he's saying and Hamhuis being the third man, and it just seems like a real joke to me. And that's a fun series. I don't think either of those teams are equipped to go, you know, beyond the next round once they get there. But it's a fun, evenly matched rivalry series, and I really don't think you need to see garbage like that.
Especially a team like Calgary that hasn't been in the playoffs in 5 years. You know, you have something really to look forward to, and you have that kind of a blemish to throw in there at the end of that game. It'd be tough if I was a Calgary fan to deal with that.
You know, what did you get from it? I don't understand it. I thought we've gotten away from that kind of garbage. And it's been a great and fun series, and potentially every time they've played, it always seems to go seven games. The greatest, I know I'm probably talking, you know, old school here, but it's still, maybe Derek remembers this, one of the greatest hockey games I ever saw. As a matter of fact, I bought it on cassette. I still own it. Was game seven of the first round Smythe quarterfinals in 1989 between the Flames and the Canucks that went into, you know, 17 minutes of maybe the greatest overtime I ever saw, and Joel Otto scored the game winner to help the Flames win and survive game seven and win a Stanley Cup. That's the kind of stuff I want to hear about. I don't want to see line brawls at the end of a game that's already been decided against two teams that I think, quite frankly, you know, we're lucky to be in the playoffs to begin with.
I mean, the hockey's been entertained, though. Yeah. You're right about the late 80s. The thing that stood out in my mind back then with sports channels coverage was actually when Gretzky was on L.A., and they played Edmonton, and Edmonton, man, they went after him. I mean, nobody took it easy on him whatsoever. And I gained a lot of respect for Gretzky back then, late 80s, early 90s, because he took all the punishment that was dished out and just kept going. And you're right, those, listen, it was a different game back then, the physicalness of the games, the fighting that went on, the penalty minutes that were built up. Donnie, you know full well, Bob Hawley doesn't care. He does what he does. Last year, Tortorella took the pressure off of him because of what he did after a particular game, right? I mean, let's be honest about that. He got upset and went over to the locker room and tried to, you know, give him a tongue lashing or go after him, whatever it was, and all the focus turned on Tortorella.
That's a fabulous point. Tortorella was in the right to do what he did and being mad at what Hartley did. But you're right. Everything that happened outside of the ice got focused on Tortorella trying to go into the room.
That's right.
And then he ended up looking like the jerk.
Yeah.
But Hartley ended up not getting talked about nearly as much. Now, listen, I like him as a coach.
He's
excellent. Of course, won a Stanley Cup in Colorado and all that. But, you know, he's got a lot of that kind of stuff in him. And I just don't think the game really has room for that stuff anymore.
He does. He doesn't care. And, you know, I think he's looking to see if his players respond to that. You know, that he wants them full in, even if they got to go after them in a dirty sense to some degree. Because Calgary is built on their conditioning. They're the best or one of the best third-period scoring teams. They came out of nowhere to make the playoffs this year. Nobody expected anything from them, period, in terms of making the playoffs. And that's just the way he has his team wound up. They believe in themselves because they think that they're the best-conditioned team, period, because they took the guy from L.A. The guy that was their strength and conditioning coach with the Kings during their two Stanley Cups, I did a little research. Van Astens, I think his last name. He went back to Calgary because that's where he's from. And I read an article about Hartley and his team and their conditioning, and he was talking about this. This is what this team is rallying behind, their strength, the type of hockey they play. They're going to be physical, and they're going to be nasty. And I just think that, he stole game one. Goal at the end of regulation.
Yeah.
They jumped out 1-0.
Yeah.
Now it's tied up. They were handled a little better by Vancouver in that second game. But I think he doesn't care. He wanted to send a message that now you're coming to Calgary, and we'll see if it backfires on him or not, right? I mean, that's how I look at that.
Well, we'll see. We'll find out tonight whether anything carries over into Game 3. But I think Calgary's got a good team. I picked Vancouver in 7.
Right.
I just, you know, whether it was going to be Locke or Miller, which that's another topic of conversation, too, of not giving the job back to Miller. And will that eventually be what happens if Vancouver, say, loses tonight with Locke in goal? But
it could, yeah.
I just didn't think it was really necessary. You earned the split that you were looking for.
Yeah.
You said one of the best third period teams in the National Hockey League. Tremendous story. The message of them getting the split to me should have been loud and clear to Vancouver, not anything that happened at the end of the game.
Exactly.
Yeah, and especially without Giordano back there because he was a star early in the season.
Mm-hmm. Another story too. He's winning. He's probably winning the Norris Trophy or coming close to it.
Right.
And everybody thought Calgary was done when he got hurt, and the fact that they made it just shows you just how special that team is. And we'll see if they can now win a best of 5.
Yeah. All right. So now Montreal and Ottawa head into overtime.
Yeah. Early. Montreal had a power play late in the third period
on
a delay of game penalty. Couldn't take advantage of it. So we'll see if that comes back to burn them.
All right. So earlier today, you know, here's the dilemma in Chicago, right? Crawford gets pounded in game 1. Quenneville, one of the best coaches I've ever seen, makes the switch to Darling.
Yeah.
42 saves later, he steals one in double overtime. Right? He puts Crawford back in, showing loyalty to a Stanley Cup winning goalie. They get hammered in game 2.
Yeah.
But Weber gets hurt, and now they come back for game 3 today. Did you catch any of the game today to see what was going on? Because Jonathan Toews had a great game.
He did. Yep. And then Darling played well again.
And now he's back in.
Yeah. So, again, it's kind of a similar situation to Ottawa. You know what? You had a bag. I'm going to give you that second chance, and it doesn't, you know, you don't come through. You know, he puts Crawford back in there, and he doesn't respond. And now Darling, who's another one of those great stories, played everywhere on earth, hometown kid trying to play, you know, for the team he grew up rooting for. But you know what it is about Chicago? Come on, listen. We can talk all we want about Corey Crawford. I got to give him respect. He won a Stanley Cup.
Right.
But Corey Crawford's not a league goaltender. Corey Crawford is like, Mike Vernon at the end of his career, Chris Osgood in Detroit.
Right.
On a superior team.
Yeah.
Don't screw it up, you know. But, you know, and I'm not saying he can't be great. Listen, the 42 saves that he made shows you that he can be great. But Chicago has, now with Kane back and Taves and Sharp now,
Hossa is back on the horse there.
Yeah, that's just a terrific hockey team.
They're stacked offensively. Who scares you more, them or Tampa, offensively?
No, I think it's got to be Chicago.
They are unbelievable. I can't believe they weren't
there. They've got so many. And they've got underrated players, too,
that you don't talk about a lot.
Like Johmerson is a guy who's got two Stanley Cups on the blue line. I've always loved Johnny Oduya going back to his days in New Jersey. I always thought he was a very underrated player.
He's rock solid back there, man. He is a big, strong kid. Yeah. I like him a lot back on the point.
So they're a team, and I'm not saying that they don't need goaltending, but, you know, they don't very rarely do you need a, you know, a goalie to stand you know, on his head there. So if Darling's the guy and he's not going to mess it up, ride it. But, you know, that's the one team that, you know, has kind of a two-headed monster in goal that I still think can win the Stanley Cup.
Right.
You know, St. Louis, is it Elliott or is it Allen? Is it, you know, what's happening in Vancouver? Is it Miller or is it Locke?
Right.
What's happening in Detroit now? You know, those are teams I just don't think have what it takes. Chicago does.
Chicago's the opposite of Montreal, right?
Right.
I mean,
yes.
Montreal relies on price, but Chicago relies on their offense. And,
yes,
and even guys
that,
like Duncan Keith and Seabrook, they put up points back there. Do you think
the only other team, you know, from a blue line standpoint that I think produces more is Nashville, because they get so much out of Jones and Yossi and Weber, but now that Weber's hurt, you know, that's going to put a damper on that.
Well, that was my last question about this series.
The production that they get out of the blue line in Chicago is fantastic.
Right. That's my last question about this particular series. Do you think that Weber missing a couple of games is going to wind up costing them the series?
Yeah, I didn't think they were going to win the series anyway.
Me neither, but that really hurts.
God, he's got a howitzer for a shot, you know, and the other guys have, you know, Jones got a big shot too, but they maneuver into position, but Weber's that guy a lot like PK. You just get him on that point, unleash that shot, that's going to hurt them on the power play, that's going to hurt them offensively, because, listen, when you're relying on a kid like Forsberg or Mike Ribeiro to be your big offensive guys, that's going to come back to haunt you. That's just a team that can't really afford to lose much from an offensive standpoint, not to mention what Weber can bring defensively, but that's a really tough loss. I think Chicago is going to get out of that series fine.
And plus with Weber too, he's such a minutes eater. You know, and when you're relying on him to give you those types of minutes, you know, you can't expect a Roman Yossi or just Seth Jones to put in those 27-minute games.
And they're good,
like
too.
They're good, but they're not of that quality. And especially,
well, but you make an extra. I mean, I could put a Yossi or Jones, who's only in his second year, and have him play 30-plus minutes, but are they going to be as productive as 30-plus minutes that Weber is going to give you?
Exactly.
So they'll replace the minutes, but those guys aren't going to be able to play at that kind of level for half a game.
Yeah, and plus you're taking him out. He gets hurt in a game that they send a message to Chicago, a 6-2 win, and then he gets hurt towards the end, and that kind of hurts from an emotional standpoint, because he's your leader. So now with St. Louis and Minnesota, yesterday Tarasenko with a hat trick, the young guy going crazy, Shattenkirk, Alex Steen, all these guys are chipping in. St. Louis, do you think that they get over the hump? And I'm only talking about the last couple of years. They were up 2-0 2 years ago against the Kings. Last year they were up 2-0 on Chicago, and that's why when they lost game one, I was like, it's probably a good thing for them. So you think they get over the hump and they take out Minnesota, or did you have Minnesota go in this one?
I picked them, and maybe this is insulting, and I shouldn't put it on one guy, but I talked to so many people during the Ranger intermissions. You know, Dan Rosen from NHL.com, EJ Raddick. Yeah, watch out for Minnesota. Watch out for Minnesota. That's a good team. I'm like, yeah, but is Devan Dubnyk going to be the guy? And I know he was on an awful Edmonton team, and he was on an awful Arizona team,
right.
And maybe he is a really good goaltender, and I know he played, you know, almost exclusively down the stretch for Minnesota. But
yeah, he did.
He's
probably going to be up for the Vezina along with Holpe, although Price will win it. He had it,
and he's sure. And I guess what it was like. It was like 34 straight starts when the Rangers played him. So it's got to be close to 40 now.
Yeah,
you know, and good for him. And I don't want to disparage the kid. I just can't wrap my mind around Minnesota making a run behind, you know, Devan Dubnyk, and I just don't know if they can do it. Now, can they beat St. Louis? Sure. You know, they can beat St. Louis. But I think, as you said, Tarasenko, who's probably the best player in the NHL that nobody's talking about.
Without question.
He's a difference maker. And I've always been, and I know he's had struggles lately, but I've always respected Ken Hitchcock as a coach.
Yeah, he's an excellent coach.
You know, and Mike Yeo is a good coach, too. But I just think Hitchcock is a, you know, I think they'll get past Minnesota, but no farther than that, right? Because, I mean, look what's going to be for them after they beat them. It would be Chicago, and I just think that's, you know, as good as St. Louis can be.
Right.
I just don't know if they've got the talent to do that.
And two teams that have been around as long as St. Louis and Washington, which one's the bigger heartbreaker for their fan base? St. Louis or Washington? I tell you, it's pretty close.
No, I go St. Louis.
You think St. Louis is the biggest heartbreaker, right?
Mm.
So would
it's got to be. I mean, at least, because this is what's weird about St. Louis. They go to all those Stanley Cup finals as expansion team because
right.
the league thought it was smart to put all the expansion teams in one
division.
Early on, yeah, that was like a promise to them. Yeah, when they came in the league,
I guess it made sense because what it did was at least give that fan base a feel like they could make runs. But what it made was like a joke of the Stanley Cup final. Those teams couldn't even get wins
because it was three straight times they lost to Montreal, wasn't it?
Yeah, right. And then they lost
to Boston one time.
The Bobby Hull goal was against
St. Louis. And in all those years in a row, 20-something years in a row, right, they went to the playoffs and never went back to the Stanley Cup final.
Amazing.
And only one time that I remember even going to the conference final. You know, so for this team that lived in the playoffs all those years, never able to make a run. At least Washington, which I think is a joke that the one year they went to the Stanley Cup final was with not a very good team.
Oh, in
98 when they got swept by Detroit.
But, Peter Bondra and only the goalie.
Final. You know, but you're right. I mean, I just think a longer period of time. It has been 30 plus years of constantly going to the playoffs and not even being able to get to, you know, a Stanley Cup final and only one conference final. I mean, that's a lot of one and duns, two and duns for a franchise to go 3+ decades doing that. That's got to be rough.
They had some big time coaches. You talk about. You know, Ken Hitchcock now, but they had Joel Quenneville way back when, and they were a solid team in the early 2000s.
Mike Keenan.
Missed it a couple of chances. Yeah.
Brian Sutter.
You know, he had him one goal away from getting past Detroit. I don't know if they would have got past Colorado, but, I mean, Quenneville was real – he had a real good team with Chris Pronger and Keith Tkachuk. In the early 2000s, I thought they were poised. They had Al McGinnis. I thought they were going to go somewhere, and they always seemed to kill their fans when it comes to that.
And then I thought they were poised in 96 to make a run, and Grant Fuhr got hurt, if you remember.
Yep.
I guess it was John Casey that gave up the goal to Eisman.
The guy
in
who took Minnesota to the Cup in 91, right?
Yeah.
I know. I'm with you. Yeah, so, they always break their teams off.
Well, you know, but you're right. I mean, the Capitals, I mean, they've been and I get I give credit to their fan base because, like, Dave Maloney would tell me, he said he'd call games when he first got the job, you know, early Ovechkin, you know, building half empty, people not caring. I've called quite a few games in Washington, and that building is energetic. They're fired up. They're all dressed in red.
Right.
You know, and
they really love
the team, and it's really become one of the major fan bases in the United States in the NHL, but they just have not been able to find any kind of consistent success.
Yeah.
And I am a big believer, you know, and of course George McPhee's job last year, not being able to get that team even into the playoffs. But I think you almost need a Herschel Walker type of deal there. I think it's time you got to part ways with Ovechkin. He can bring back so much for your franchise. I just don't know if you're ever going to win with him. They haven't won internationally with him. They haven't won in the NHL with him.
They haven't been past the second round.
Yeah, you know,
no.
So
it's amazing.
It's hard. I know you've built a fan base around it, and they probably would revolt, but if you were able to get back a package that I think you would get if you traded him could maybe be a turning point for the franchise because I just don't know if you're ever winning with that. They're always going to be too top-heavy when you've got Ovechkin. He just swallows up the room, right? And Backstrom's a good player, and they've got some nice players there, but you know, he commands the minutes, he commands all the attention, and I just think he gobbles up the room. I don't think it's his fault either.
Right.
It just the way he plays his game and just the way things are built, I just don't think you win with a guy like that.
Well, actually, let me just interject on that. I mean, yeah, I agree with most of what you said about Ovechkin, but when you think about it, I mean, the man went from a minus 35 player last year to a plus 10 player this year with Barry Trotz.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
And I think the fact that he basically accepted the system, because obviously they did a complete 180 degree turn with the way Washington's played their game, and he basically accepted into it right away. And I think, despite the fact of what you're saying, I think to me, overall, all around, I think he's had one of his best years he's ever had.
And you're right, and that's why I thought that the Capitals would beat the Islanders, too, is the other thing, is, you know, Barry Trotz. Because under Bruce Boudreau, this was a team that always played, like, Harlem Globetrotters hockey, and then when it came down to kind of clamp it down, and it wouldn't work. And talking to people around Washington when I did the game, the last game of the regular season, they're like, this is a different team. They're good around the boards. They fight in the corners. Barry Trotz has them built for the playoffs. And then I see them lay the egg that they laid in game one. I'm like, that's exactly what I've seen from the Capitals all those years ago.
But you know what?
So you're right. I mean, and Ovechkin, he becomes a plus player. He still scores 53 goals, so it didn't come at the expense. Usually when you see players become better defensively, like when Steve Yzerman became the better defensive player, it took away his points, right?
Right.
He scored less goals.
Yep.
This guy goes out there and scores just about as many goals as he usually scored. But I just need to see it in the playoffs. I do, and we'll see. He had the big game, too. So we'll see if that makes a difference. But you know what? It's great. Did a lot of great things in the regular season. Good for you. But if it still results in a one-and-done where you don't see a lot of production from him, then I'm not really sure if that's what you need to win a Stanley Cup.
Just getting back to the Islanders real quick, Don. I'll make it fast because I know we got to go soon. But thank you for the call. And I want to say one thing. Once in a while, I do catch Ranger games. And you are fantastic. It's something that's not easy what you do on calling a game on a hockey game on the radio. You do a great job.
Well, listen, that means a lot. I appreciate getting the feedback because, you know, you don't really get a lot of feedback in this business unless it's negative.
Yeah. But
Twitter will just ruin your confidence sometimes. But
don't pay attention to that.
No, that means not. It makes me feel good because I have so much fun doing it.
Yep.
And working with Dave is great and just being around
Do you think the Islanders do what they did in the beginning of the year, turning around now? You, like you said, Tavares got the goal in overtime. You think they pull this one out?
Yeah, I'm starting to believe. Like I said, I picked the Capitals in six, so you don't want to change your pick in the middle, and I can't.
He's trying to tell you they're going to lose.
What's that? What did he say?
I said you're trying to tell them they're still going to lose. That's all right.
No, I thought they outplayed them.
Honestly, a lot of the things that I was worried about haven't happened. I mean, they held on to the lead in game one, which I thought was a major concern, right?
Yeah,
I mean, they
didn't
hold on to the lead against
Columbus
the last
game
of the season. They held on to it. You know, they bounced back. So they're showing me a lot more resiliency than I thought. I was concerned about the way they played down the stretch of the season, but they've kind of convinced me otherwise. So I think you got to feel really good. I mean, Tuesday is going to be pivotal because you don't want to just hand it right back to them again.
Right. You got to come out and win that game. Halak did it for Montreal. He put the team on his back and did it. So maybe he could do something.
Yeah, and I've heard that, and that was in 2010. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, when you talked about, or somebody had asked me earlier in the interview about just experience, I mean, Halak can draw to the fact that, you know, he took the job away from world class goaltender in Price and took that team to the conference final.
All right, Donnie, you were a great co-host
because
we are at the end of our show. I want to thank you for joining us on short notice. I'll see you at the Garden, and we'll get you back on later in the playoffs. Okay, buddy?
Take care, man.
All right, folks, stay tuned.
Thanks,
playoffs continue tomorrow night. Rangers in Pittsburgh Tuesday. The Islanders try to go up 3-1. I can't believe I'm saying that. You have a good night.
Let's go Islanders. Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.